Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 121 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ryan Davis. I'm here with Sean Sears. We're discussing a pretty gross Cubs loss from last night against Kansas City Royals. What's up, Sean?
Yeah, gross is, I'm good. Gross is about the perfect way to describe it. Just not a good win, especially when you're looking at the last two opponents the Cubs struggled against, being the Padres and the Royals, two of the, like, the worst teams in baseball. It's just a very deflating feeling as you look at this team that still somehow has the best record in the National League despite two really bad series.
Yeah, I guess there is some silver lining in all of this, but it doesn't feel good right now. The Cubs got shut out by the Royals 9-0. It was pretty disappointing. They had three hits, all singles. Jose Quintana was pitching well until he came out for the seventh inning, when the Royals went bloop, bloop, homer. And then he left the game 6 1/3, 5 earned runs. Tyler Chatwood came in to finish the game out and gave up 4 runs to cap things. It was bad. So the Cubs are off today, mercifully, but they begin a 3-game series with the Washington Nationals tomorrow. There are two ways you could look at this game. You could look at it as, one, a failure to sweep the, I would call them the dead-ass Royals. Pretty obviously the worst team in baseball. The team that is last in the American League in runs scored. The team that's last in the American League in ERA. They just beat you 9-0. So it's a bad loss. You go 4-3 in those seven games that you needed to go at least 5-2. I know that's a one-game difference, and the span of one game shouldn't be the difference between that's great, they did great, versus, wow, this is such a massive failure. But at this point for the Cubs, given those two teams, really, it kind of is. And the pressure to sweep the Royals was kind of put on because you split with the awful Padres. Now, at the same time, this is finishing a stretch of 21 games in 20 days for the Cubs because of a doubleheader. Mm-hmm. And if you're ever going to look as dead as they did yesterday, it would be understandable if you were doing it at the end of 21 games in 20 days. So there's two ways to look at it. Either way, it's bad news.
Yeah, exactly. And we can be positive about this because you can look at it, and like you said, it makes sense. The Cubs are depleted when it comes to the type of offensive players they have at the moment. They've been playing a ton of games. They're going to have to play probably a ton more because they've only got two more off days now through the rest of the season, right?
They actually have two this week. I think they have an off day. Oh, they have an off day today. I think they have an off day after the Nationals series.
Okay.
Heading into the Brewers. So two off days in the next 5 days, I think. And then after that, I believe they only have two left.
Okay.
The rest of the year. So, yeah, they're off today, Friday, Saturday, Sunday against the Nationals at home. Off Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday against the Brewers. And then I think they are off 2 days in September, looks like. September 13th is their next off day after that. And then scrolling down more, September. Yeah, that may be the last one, unless I missed one somewhere in there. But yeah, there's only a handful of days off.
So, I mean, basically from Monday on, the Cubs have to play essentially a month of baseball straight. So, I mean, take advantage of these off days when you can, I guess.
I did miss one. So off today, off on Monday, and then they play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, off the following Monday.
And okay.
And then from August 21st to the end of the season, only one off day.
That's still a pretty rough stretch.
that's a very bad stretch.
It's better than I thought, as we were describing before, but that's still bad. It's going to be tough. I guess, you know, you chalk it up to, well, things happen, and it sucks because clearly, I mean, this Cubs team is far better than what we're seeing right now, but they're just in a rough stretch. Their last four series have only been able to score, I think it's like 47 runs, and got blanked twice in these 12 games. Like, just not good.
Yeah, they scored 8 runs against the Royals in total. The Royals scored more than that yesterday. They still won 2 of 3, so I guess you could say that's kind of a miracle. But averaging less than 3 runs against the team that is one of the worst offensive teams and one of the worst pitching teams in the league is it's just kind of a sign of where they are right now. Obviously, Bryant's not in the lineup, and that makes a huge difference.
Yeah,
I think because of how they were getting by with him out there kind of flailing and not hitting homers when he was hurt, I think that kind of masked how much he is important to the lineup. And without him out there, I mean, obviously David Bodie's been doing great. You know, he's been terrific. Ben Zobrist is terrific. But, you know, Addison Russell has been awful offensively lately. Albert Almora has been in a slump. Ian Happ's been in a massive slump. Jason Hayward's been hitting okay. Rizzo's been hitting fine, leading off. Baez has been good. But then Kyle Schwarber, this is a stat that I put down to talk about in the next segment, but we can talk about it now. Since April 25th, so basically the beginning of the season, like a month in, he's hitting .229 with a .350 on base, which is solid, and a .431 slugging. So a below 800 OPS in his last 315 plate appearances. That's the bulk of the season. Basically, he got off to a really hot start, had a stretch of like 10 games that were just red hot in April, and then since then has just been kind of meh at the plate.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's a guy you really need to step up. The issue really is, like, outside of Javi and Rizzo for the moment, the Cubs just don't really have anyone else in this lineup that's been super consistent. Ben Zobrist has been great, clearly, and David Bodie's picked up the slack since, you know, coming up since Brian's been on the DL and had clutch moments, but I wouldn't necessarily say that Bodie's been, like, an offensive catalyst by any means. But they just don't really have anyone else, it feels like, in this lineup sometimes. Like, like Rizzo can get on real quick at the beginning of an inning, and Baez, you know, might maybe hit a double and they might score a run there. But then it feels like the rest of this game, it's like they're just preying on, like, someone like Javi or just someone to crush a home run or slap a ball super hard. They don't score a whole lot with the runners in scoring position. They're still batting below, I think it's .248 right now with runners in scoring position at the moment. And that was yesterday too, so that probably went down.
Probably not that much though. I don't think they had many runners in scoring position yesterday.
That's valid. Yeah, very good point. Maybe you got
0-for-2.
That's true. Yeah, you need runners on base to be able to score runners in scoring position, huh? But yeah, just not very good. Looking at some of the offenses, like, categories that they're leading in right now. I mean, they lead the league in on-base percentage. They're second in batting average. They lead the league in BABIP. They're top five in runs, RBI, slugging. They walk. I think only the Dodgers walk more than them right now. They somehow lead the league in WAR, collective team WAR right now, according to Fangraphs. Like, it's just it makes no sense that this offense is struggling so much when they're doing everything so well. And, you know, it's probably some type of combination of the Cubs just going through and smashing teams in moments. And then, you know, also it just they had a really solid offensive first half for the most part. So, I mean, I'm sure those numbers are a little bit inflated at this point. But still, I mean, this team is really good offensively. It just doesn't seem like they execute when they need to.
Yeah, I'm going through and looking here. It looks like they've scored 10 or more runs. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 times. They've scored 10 or more 16 times, and a lot of those are like, you know, 13 or more runs. But on the flip side, they've been shut out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 times. And if you want to add in being shut out plus one run, that's like way too many to count. That's probably like 25, 30 times. They've scored one run or zero runs a lot. And if you wanted to take it to two runs, because it's really difficult to win with two runs or less, it's probably like 40 times. So a really big chunk of your season has been games where you're not scoring enough runs to win. But then you also have these times where you pile on 13 runs. And, it's great when you can beat teams like that and beat them into submission. But doing that and then going out the next day and scoring two runs and losing 4-2, it's not good enough. I mean, that's what the definition of inconsistency. And that's a great way to pad your stats and lead the league in runs scored. Or on-base percentage or slugging or any of those great stats that are tremendous to lead the league in. But the real story is the consistency or the lack thereof.
Yeah, that's really it. I wrote an article today yesterday for NBC Sports, just kind of taking a look at the Cubs offense, and I decided to kind of dive into a little bit of like win probability stats and look at the clutch stat, which is very, I mean, the clutch stat is very, very not the most accurate representation. It's kind of hard to define what clutch is, and to quantify it is kind of ridiculous in certain aspects, but it does show, it does give context on how teams have been doing in moments where it's a high leverage situation and you need your team to come through. And while the Cubs like are one of the higher teams in win probability, their clutch stat rating is like 3.5 points below the league average. And they're like, I think like the 7th worst team in high leverage situations, according to this clutch stat, which makes sense. The Cubs strand a ton of runners on. I saw like the opportunities that they had to hit into ground or and to hit into double plays, not too many how many times they've hit, but the opportunity to hit into ground rule or ground or if I could talk today into a double play, they had, I think it was like 311. The closest team beyond that was like 289. So the Cubs are getting a ton of runners on base. They just aren't doing anything with them in times. They strand a ton. They seem to push only one run across when they load the bases up sometimes, or, you know, the next guy smacks into a double play and that scoring chance is over, and it kind of bites them in the butt sometimes. But then we see games like they had in the first game back from the All-Star break where the Cubs didn't necessarily hit the ball off the cover, but, you know, popped around 12 hits and scored 9 runs just from, you know, BABIP being the Cardinals essentially. So, I mean, it works sometimes, but in other times where they're trying to move this ball around and just force the other team to make a play, sometimes these teams are making the play and, you know, screwing the Cubs out of a chance of really scoring. Instead of, you know, trying to drive the ball, they're just trying to punch it through and make it difficult. And it works sometimes, but other times you strand two runners with, you know, one out. It's a bummer.
Yeah. I mean, just doing some math here, they have 37 games in which they've scored two or less runs, and they're 7-37 in those games. Frankly, I'm a little surprised they've won as many as 7. I feel like that's kind of impressive, to be honest. Yeah. That they've actually been somewhat lucky in that the games in which they've scored two or less runs, they've pulled off 7 wins. So that speaks to what you're talking about. It's I don't know how this team has the best record in the National League. And I think that's part of it, is that they've gotten kind of lucky in some of the games they've won. When they've scored 8 or more runs, I don't know how many games it is, but 8 or more runs, they've won every single time. So they've never lost 9-8 or you know, 10-9 or anything like that. So yeah. They're winning when they bludgeon teams. When they don't score, they're mostly losing, but occasionally pulling out a win. And then, you know, when those games in the middle, the 3-7 runs, which is obviously you want more than 3, but that's kind of like the normal range where teams should be. They're doing well there. So I guess they're figuring it out. It's just, is this team going to get in October and be the team that bludgeons you, or is it going to be the team that scores 2 runs? Because I feel like it's more likely in the cold of October against the elite pitching that comes with playing in the postseason, I feel like it's more likely that they're going to be the team that scores 2 runs.
Yeah, that's unfortunate too, just because we've seen the Cubs kind of try and take this, because the power is clearly, it hasn't been there that much this year, outside of maybe Javi Baez and Schwarber, and I guess Rizzo too, whatever. I mean, they're hitting home runs, but there isn't a ton of power on this team like there has been in years past. And it felt like they were kind of trying to take the approach of, you know, Madden talked about inversing the lineup and putting like a guy like Rizzo at the top of the lineup and then sliding like someone like Zobrist at 3 or 4 because they're high contact guys, and kind of seeing if the high on base guys can knock the guys in with the high contact batters. And it works sometimes, but also, you know, if you're not necessarily driving the ball and just kind of looking for holes in the infield, it doesn't necessarily always translate to runs, because, you know, 3 singles loading the bases up doesn't score you a run usually, you know, depending on what the situation is. So, I mean, it's frustrating to watch. And you would think these high contact guys, the guys that don't, offense that's scoring without having to rely on a ton of power, would probably be a more successful postseason team, because the pitching is going to get better and you need high contact as opposed to, you know, being able to just crush everything, because you're not going to get those pitches to crush likely in the postseason. But I am not confident in this team right now that they can win a postseason series.
Yeah, me neither. doing more math while you were talking. It's 37 games scoring two or less, so 0-2. 4-6 is only 28 games. So that tells you which they are more likely to do, score 4-6 runs or 0-2. So that's a team that's, I mean, you when you hear that stat, you would think, there's a bad offensive team.
Right.
Like, it's a team that can't score the, you know, kind of average amount of runs that it would take to win a game. That's a bad offensive team. So I just don't know. I don't know what you can expect from them.
God, they just constantly contradict themselves. It makes no sense because, like we were talking in the show, like, they lead in so many key categories that you would think this offense is fantastic. But then you look at other stats and maybe other peripherals, and then you start looking at the run totals per game, and you're like, okay, so this is a team that clobbers the crap out of some teams but can't score the next night. Or, you know, like, they have, what, 36 come from behind wins now? Like, yeah. They seem to always shoot themselves in the foot and dig themselves out. You can't win baseball games like this. I'm starting to see it now. The Cubs are slowing down. They don't have their pieces. You know, who knows? Even if Chris Bryant comes back, that doesn't solve the rest of this lineup, just kind of struggling at the moment. So, I mean, the numbers say that this offense should probably push itself back in the right direction at some point. But, you know, the issue for me is, you know, is it going to be too late? If the Cubs find themselves in 2 weeks and, you know, the offense is great, then what if the Brewers have a 3-game lead at that point in the division? Because that could happen. If the Cubs have a bad series against the Nationals and drop two against the Brewers series that they have coming up next week, you know, very easily could see the Cubs being in a completely different position than they are now. And that's, I mean, you just aren't giving yourself enough time to really. This is probably one of the worst times to be slumping, just because you don't have much time to fix it and still not lose anything.
Right. Yeah. The only way that this could end up fine is if you say that they peak like right at the end of September and sneak into the postseason that way. Maybe they win the division by 2 or 3 games, and really just everything comes together right at the end of September. Darvish is pitching well and is back. The rotation's going well. The bullpen's rested because you brought up all the guys in September. And use the crap out of Luke Farrell and you know, Justin Hancock and other guys, and everything's good. Bryant's healthy and swinging the bat well. That's the only thing you can really hope for at this point. But without many off days, especially I think one off day in September, I think one off day the last 4 or 6 weeks of the season, something like that. That's not something that seems all that likely. I mean, at the very least, it doesn't seem likely that anybody's going to be rested going into the postseason, which is like the number one thing we harped on at the very beginning of the year was that for this team to win a World Series, they needed to separate early and rest down the stretch, and that is not going to happen.
No, that's safe to assume the Cubs are going to be a team that isn't going to necessarily be tired, but they won't be as well rested as maybe some of those teams. Good news is I think everyone else in the NL is in a division race that's tight, so it's not like they're going to be able to rest guys for the most part, but
right,
you know, they're probably in a better situation than the Cubs are, which is just, it's such an anomaly, talking about the team that, you know, the best team in the National League, the best run scoring team in the National League, not being able to score runs in clutch moments or in general sometimes, which, God, you just fist through walls sometimes, Ryan.
I know, man. Well, the good news is the Cubs have the biggest division lead of any of the division leaders in the National League.
We'll hang our hat on that.
They're the best team in the National League. They have the biggest divisional lead. So I guess if you're going to say which team is a favorite based on that would be the Cubs. So
yeah,
they do have as good a chance to get to the World Series as any other team in the National League. I'll say it that way. The Arizona Diamondbacks lead the Dodgers by a half game. They lead the Rockies by 3. The Phillies lead the Braves by a half game and the Nationals by 6. But the Nationals have been playing a little better lately.
Yeah.
And so you can't really count them out at this point. The Cubs lead the Brewers by a game and a half and the Cardinals by 6.5. So it's just, I don't know. Let's move on to our second segment. We'll talk about some more positive news. So better news on Yu Darvish again yesterday. He threw, again, what was it, 35 pitches in a sim game.
Yeah. It was 33, something like that.
Yeah, 33 sounds right. It was 2 quote-unquote innings. Tommy La Stella fouled the ball off his foot. that was kind of like the big takeaway. Darvish feels fine. He threw his pitches for strikes. He threw 93 miles an hour. Where they go from here, I believe they said another sim game. Is that right? Another sim game, they think Monday. And then after that, it would be a rehab start. Or maybe it was Sunday. I don't remember. But if it's Monday for a sim game and then a rehab start, let's say you give him 4 days off and then a rehab start, that would be the 18th. And I would think he would need probably at least three rehab starts at this point. So the 18th, four more days, the 23rd, four more days, the 28th, four more days, 2nd of September. So when rosters expand, essentially, that's the optimistic timeline. I guess you could say maybe he only needs two more rehab starts, but at this point, the difference between two and three versus, you know, having to send somebody down before rosters expand, I feel like the safe play is letting him take his time and then shoot for one of the first days in September as the time back. And then from there, if you're starting him every 5 days or every 6 days, if you go to a six-man rotation, give him 5 days off in between each start, you're looking at one, two, so two, maybe eight,
five starts.
Yeah, about five starts is what you would give him.
Yeah, that's, I mean, honestly, that's hopefully enough. I don't know. I agree with you, though. I mean, it doesn't make any sense if Darvish is so close to that. If you're so close to the September call-ups, roster expands and everything like that, just, you know, leave him, let him have another minor league start, let him feel comfortable, make sure he's got his confidence building. I mean, he only pitched five innings in his one rehab start back in June and struck out like seven guys, was topping out at like 95, 96. So, I mean, he looked good. He didn't feel good afterwards, but yeah, he looked good. So, I mean, that's encouraging. It's also a month and a half ago. So, so I mean, you know, grain of salt here. But yeah, I mean, take your time with him at this point. Five starts from him as the postseason gets closer. I'll take it. Barring that he's pitching well and not looking like the guy he did when he got lit up against the Braves twice and, you know, all that stuff. But whatever you can get out of Darvish this season, I think is a cherry on top of basically everything else, just because, I mean, you know, he hasn't been great. You haven't been able to expect much out of him at this point, but if we can get him back, that's huge.
Yeah, I suppose you could give him 5 days instead of four in between the sim game and then the rehab starts, and then just give him two rehab starts and then bring him back at the beginning of September. That would work too, if you think three is kind of overkill, right. which it might be. I mean, at this point, if he throws 50 pitches in his first rehab start and 75 in his second, yeah, I don't see a reason that he probably needs to go back out for a third before he comes to the big leagues. But I'm also not a doctor, and I'm not you, Darvish. So
that's true.
Yeah, you get
confused for him though, right? Some people
sometimes people think I'm you, Darvish.
Yeah, I can see it.
But that's the good news, is Darvish is kind of on the comeback trail. If he comes back and pitches well in five games, that's great news for the Cubs. Brandon Morrow also on the comeback trail. He threw from 90 feet, which is basically the mound. Didn't throw off the mound, but played catch from 90 feet. No pain. Felt good. Blah, blah, blah. No other news on him moving forward. Just kind of sticking with what I said before. I'll be kind of surprised if he's back much before the start of September. So I would also guess that he maybe is a September roster expand kind of guy, bring him off the DL. And then no news on Bryant, still not swinging a bat as far as I know. That's really the big thing at this point. I don't feel like when he went on the DL, people were more concerned about him than Darvish and Morrow. But at this point, really missing Bryant is the big problem. And the fact that there's no news. I know he'll play again for the Cubs this year, and unless there's something structurally wrong where he has to have surgery, which they've said there isn't, he'll play again this year. It's just whether he's healthy or not is the problem.
Yeah, that was exactly the big question, is whether or not this guy's going to actually be 100%. The Cubs need him to be. Even 85% Chris Bryant, though, I will take at this point, whatever percentage you want to put on it. Chris Bryant is Chris Bryant, former MVP, clearly, you know, arguably the best player in the Cubs when he's healthy. him not being healthy, that's a bummer. But yeah, it's a big upgrade. And if they can just get him back and know that at the very least he's not going to cause himself, at least like re-injure that shoulder necessarily any further, sure, you put him out there and see what he can do. If he's pretty much ineffective like he was towards the end of or right before he got put on the DL again, and you know, maybe at that point you shut him down, you kind of look at this team and be like, all right, well, you know, this is what we have, we're going to go out here and give it our shot, but you know, maybe we reload for next year type of thing. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case. I can't even imagine the Cubs going out there and being like, all right, yeah, well, we'll just do what we can and consider it good. I'm sure they'll push their best effort through, but yeah, Chris Brent's got to be healthy. I don't think he will be. It seems like, I know they were talking about when he first originally hurt him, that this could be something that doesn't get really dealt with until the off season. Which just kills your confidence for this team. But at the same time, Chris Bryant being back would be huge. So let's pray for September, I guess, right?
Yeah, I looked at his stats going back to like the middle of May when essentially this injury happened. And he had 178 plate appearances while on the active roster since that time. He had 3 home runs and batted .244 with a .331 on base and a .359 slugging. So a .690 OPS with a BABIP of .327, which is good. So that tells you a lot of the story. And over those 38 games, the Cubs were 23-15. So obviously it's not good enough, but having him as kind of a presence in the lineup, I mean, he still walked 17 times in those, you know, trips to the plate, you know, decent walk rate. So just getting him out there to give you whatever he has got to be better than, I mean, not necessarily better than David Bodie has been, but it gives you that depth, gives you the ability to use David Bodie in other spots, gives you the ability to rest guys on certain days, gives you the ability to maybe say, hey, we can take Addison Russell out of the lineup because we have Chris Bryant at third base, and you know, maybe he'll actually draw a walk. Like Bryant's, like this slash line is about the same as Bryant injured at his worst. It's about the same as Addison Russell's season slash line. So, just being able to get him back gives you something.
Yeah. Quickly, before we change subjects here, Addison Russell, what are your thoughts of him coming into next season? Like, is this a guy that, I mean, clearly I don't think the Cubs can trade him for much at this point. He's arbitration eligible for 3 more seasons, I think. I mean, if this is the guy the Cubs are going to get the next 3 years, is this a guy that we really, you know, do you consider maybe just actually at some point, if Bodie comes in the next season and is still hitting the way he is, do you just consider Baez and Bodie as shortstop and second base, or, you know, do you stick with Russell? I know the defense is still stellar, but I mean, he's basically an offensive zero at this point.
Yeah, no, I've been thinking for a while now that the hope is that they do move him and maybe a package deal in the offseason. I don't know. I don't know really how you bring him back next year at this point. I don't feel like, you know, obviously the defense is good and the offense in some ways has been better, but in some ways has also been worse. The contact has been better. He strikes out less than ever before. The on-base percentage is higher than pretty much what it's ever been. So if you just look at batting average and on-base, he's probably having a career year. It's really just the fact that to strike out less, the power has completely disappeared. So he's just been a really bad offensive player overall.
Mm-hmm.
He's never been able to put it all together, which is unfortunate for him because the talent's there and the Cubs were relying on the talent to be there. He's a decent offensive, better than decent. He's a good offensive shortstop. He still has a crap throwing arm. He has to do like 2 crow hops to get it over to first base. He's one of the worst in making like quality throws. There's a stat, I don't remember what it's called or what it is, but there was a stat last year on shortstops making good throws to first base, like whether it bounced in the dirt or not. And he was basically at the end of it. And that's about right. He's a guy who gets bailed out a lot by Rizzo at first base. I don't think there's enough credit given to Rizzo on how much he bails out low throws.
I was going to say Rizzo is very good at picking the ball in the dirt. It's like him and Eric Hosmer. It's like one of Hosmer's like one like positives as a first baseman. He's like really good at picking balls. But Rizzo definitely makes his infielders look better. I think Russell benefits from that way more than, you know, a lot. I'm not very confident in Russell, and, you know, it's frustrating because we all saw the potential in 2015 and 2016, you know, especially 16, he'd be at 94 RBIs. I think that was a product of being in a really, really good offense, but still, I mean, he took advantage of the situation. I mean, it's not like someone gave him those 94 RBIs. He did that himself. So I don't know. There's potential, but it's also like, well, the Cubs are in win now mode and they don't really have time to let, you know, a soon to be 26-year-old shortstop develop.
Yeah. And I mean, people talk about, you know, the age thing, the fact that he's still only 24, actually. He won't be 25 until next January. Oh, so wow. he's still obviously very young. He's younger than David Bodie, over a year younger than David Bodie. So if that tells you anything about the potential to still develop, it's just that this is his, second worst offensive season. He's only gotten worse offensively. If you're looking at wins above replacement, he's still been worth 2.6 wins this year in only 103 games. So he's on pace for about a 3 to 3.5 win season, which is great. If you ignore everything else, if you just look at WAR, that's absolutely, you would take that out of your shortstop. It's just that I do think that maybe going into next year, if you can package Russell with maybe one of the starting pitchers like Jose Quintana or somebody that you don't necessarily want or has some potential that is not going well, and then maybe you throw in a couple prospects and get a starter back that you really like, or a guy coming off maybe trade Russell for another guy who's coming off kind of a down year. I don't know who that is, but just throwing out ideas. If you can make that kind of swap, and then you go into next year with Baez at short, and then you have Bodie and Ben Zobrist kind of sharing second base, I feel like that's probably a better situation for this team. I know a lot of fans would really love that, but yeah, just in general, Russell, he's kind of wearing out his time here. I've never gotten a sense that he fits all that well in the clubhouse anyway, so I don't think there'd be many people too upset about it. And I don't know. He seems like the kind of like the one guy who doesn't necessarily fit the rest of the team. The way everything's kind of been moving, everyone else seems to be getting a little bit better, and he just seems to kind of not be moving along with the team.
Yeah, I would agree with that to an extent. Yeah. He just does feel like an awkward presence sometimes in that locker room. I don't know. I mean, the obvious answer is people are going to be like, well, they'll just sign Manny Machado and, you know, trade these guys and get these pitchers. And, you know, somehow they'll end up both Scherzer and Machado and everything's fine. And, you know, no, none of that. That's not how all this works. And plus, I don't want Manny Machado playing shortstop. But it's another discussion. But, yeah, it just seems like it seems like the time is coming where the Cubs need to make a move like this. It felt like it was maybe last offseason. I felt like a guy like Russell or maybe even Schwarber might get moved. I feel like a move like that probably, unless even if they win the World Series this year, I still think they might look at the guys they have and be like, you know, we could probably do a little better.
Yeah. At this point, I know Addison Russell is terrible offensively, but he's been in a slump. And so his numbers have gone down, but when he breaks out of it, if he's still not hitting for power, I would consider leading him off. To be totally honest, just tell him, hey, go up there. You don't need to swing hard for the fences. If you slap a single or take a walk, that's perfect. Just get on base ahead of the guys who can actually hit the ball out of the park.
Yeah, that's how I feel too. Get some power there at the very least. You know, we have the gloves. Find some power.
Yeah, but I mean, for a shortstop, obviously still bad offensively, but it's a position where you can get away with it if you have the glove. Mm-hmm. He has the range, but at this point, that's all I'm really able to commit to when I talk about his defense, is he has great defensive range. A lot of the time, and this has been my opinion forever, because of the average throwing arm, the ball that he can get to that nobody else can get to in, short left field or wherever in the hole at shortstop, if it's hit on the ground, it doesn't matter because he can't throw you out at first base from there. So really it's, you know, keeping you from a single to left to an infield single, which doesn't mean anything except for maybe a runner going first to third. It only goes first to second. That's kind of marginal gains on his defense. where it makes a difference is when there's one popped up to left field and or to the foul territory, and we see Russell chase that down and catch it. Those are amazing catches, and those are things that very few other shortstops can do, but those are also few and far between. So his defense is good. It's pretty good. He's not a gold glove shortstop because he has too many deficiencies, and I've said forever I would prefer Baez there because he may not have all the range that Russell has, but he still has pretty good range, and he has the throwing arm that if he gets the ball in the hole at shortstop, he could still actually throw you out at first base.
Yeah, that's true. His biggest thing has always been his range. Like you said, always been able to get to balls, but yeah, his throwing arm is brutal. I do think, I mean, he does a really good job. I thought that before this year, I thought he did a really good job of picking hops and when to like go on a ball and when to attack. But I feel like this year he's been eaten up by so many weird grounders. I don't know. It is what it is, I guess, at this point. Good defensive shortstop with a so-so arm and a bat that seems to fluctuate between smacking the crap out of the ball and missing it entirely. So,
yeah. Well, all right, we can wrap on that segment. We had good news on Darvish, bad news on Russell being bad at everything. Let's go to final segment. We'll just talk about the NL Central and briefly talk about a giveaway that we're doing. So yesterday, not good news in the NL Central other than outside of the Cubs losing 9-0. The Brewers jumped on the Padres early with 5 runs in the first inning, and they won their game 8-4. The Cardinals scored 6 runs in the final 4 innings to beat the Miami Marlins 7-1. The Pirates beat the Colorado Rockies 4-3, and the Cincinnati Reds beat the Mets 8-0. So the Cubs are 66-48, still in first place with the best record in the National League. The Brewers are 66-51, 1.5 games back. The Cardinals are 60-55, 6.5 games back. Pirates are 59-56, 7.5 back. And the Reds are 16.5 back at 50-65. So before we talk about anything else, we've done 2 podcasts without me mentioning this because I keep forgetting. We're doing a ticket giveaway. I don't have any specific tickets for games. I just decided that it's probably more fun if you guys try and get into the giveaway, and then whoever I select, we just discuss a game that that person wants to go to, and then I find the cheapest tickets possible to buy for you because I'm not making big bucks off this, and I'm paying for this out of my pocket. So go to our Twitter account. We are at Locked On Cubs. I have a pinned tweet. It contains some text and then also a GIF of Schwarber dancing, so you'll know that's the one. What you need to do is like and retweet that tweet. Make sure you follow us on Twitter, and also make sure you go to the iTunes page and leave us a solid review. Not just the stars, but also like write something and put it on there. If you've already done that, don't worry about it. I can count that at the end. But be sure to go there and leave us an excellent review and tell us how much you like the podcast, because it makes it more visible. It helps if we have, you know, I think we have 41 reviews and the average is 5 stars, which is awesome. But if we had, you know, 100 reviews, that would make us more visible on iTunes, which means more people listen to the podcast and it spreads. And then Sean and I make more money and we can do more things like buy tickets and give them away. So go to Locked On Cubs, find the pinned tweet, and follow instructions if you would like a chance at winning tickets to a Cubs game in September.
I'd like to win Cubs tickets in September. Am I allowed to win?
No, you are not.
Darn.
Yeah, if I picked you, I think there might be some people upset about that.
Yeah, you're probably right. I guess we have to stay non-biased. Damn you, journalism. Definitely sign up. Check out the tickets. Check out the tweet. We'd love to, you know, get you guys out to a game. It'd be a ton of fun. And then, of course, we love when you share things about our podcast.
Yes.
So do it.
While you're at Locked On Cubs on Twitter, send us some questions, because tomorrow is an off day podcast. Yes. Because they play tomorrow, but we won't have anything to talk about from a game. So send us your questions. Even if it's just topic ideas, the things you'd like to hear us talk about, or maybe debate ideas, things you'd like to hear us go back and forth about, send those things our way. You can also email us at lockedoncubs@gmail.com. You can send questions to our personal Twitter accounts as well. I'm at Ryan Q Davis. He's at Sean R Sears. So send that stuff our way, and we only have 4 more off day podcasts before October. So, and we'll, yeah. we'll need those questions coming up in the next few days. What, three off days? 3 off days in like 2 weeks, and then one the last 6 weeks. That's oof.
Yeah.
But yeah.
That'll be interesting. But yeah, please send us questions. It'll make the conversation much easier for us.
All right. Well, I think that's good to wrap on that. Thanks for listening to episode 121 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Q Davis. I also write for Bet Chicago, the Cloud City Chronicle, if you're into non-baseball stuff. I occasionally write for NBC Sports Chicago. I have something coming up at The Athletic on minor league baseball that you may be interested in. I'll be sure to promote that when it comes. And Sean, why don't you tell them where they can find you?
Yeah, you can find me at NBC Sports. I write occasionally still for FanSided. I, of course, host the 312 podcast radio show. It's live every Saturday from 2 to 3 p.m. with my co-host Matt Peck, who actually is one of the co-hosts for Lockdown Bulls podcast. Check that out as well. Beyond that, pretty much here. I'll be doing the things here at the Lockdown Cubs. Subscribe on iTunes and everywhere you can find a podcast. Leave us some reviews if you can.
Yeah, I'm really bad about knowing where the podcast is. I know it's on iTunes. I know it's on Spotify. I think we may be on Stitcher. I don't know. Yeah, tell us also where you listen to the podcast so I know where it is. I can promote where I can find it.
That's a good idea. Yeah, if you're listening to the podcast on one of the apps that we have not mentioned, please let us know, because all we do is record it and then send it places, and then it gets put other places.
Right. Yeah. I think the average listener thinks that I'm like way more involved in the technical side of this than I am, and I've tried to stress that I am not. We literally like record this via Google Hangouts, and then I download the video from Google Hangouts and edit it and make it into an audio file, and then I upload it on Megaphone, and then it goes magically somewhere else and gets to your phone. I don't know how all that happens. So let us know how you listen to the podcast, if it's not iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher.